Mims.
All the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone. He's going to go into the end zone.
Mims.
Have won.
He gets it out. He's going to have a big field.
Mims.
It's the Mixed Picks Sports Show. Joining me live from Las Vegas, Nevada, and MixedPicks.com. That's 2Ks in Mix, 2Ks in Picks. MixedPicks.com is Steve Mickelson. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
I've said more than once, you never actually know right until like the last minute how the show might start. I have things in place, and then there might be, usually it's breaking news or something we got to, and this is kind of breaking news because behind the scenes, programming note to the audience, we may or may not have a Mixed Picks Sports Show tomorrow. We just don't know at this moment. The joy of technology. Technology has advanced our lives in so many ways, and yet it often throws you a curveball, as we find out in this industry. And on Steve's end, there's some technological issues that may or may not like make it impossible for us to do the show tomorrow. And there's life issues going on as well. And so whether or not I can pull together somebody else to scrape through an hour, we just don't know. But there may not be a show tomorrow. But we'll see. And as soon as we know, we'll let you know, or we'll figure out something that we might be able to do in place of it. I've got a few crazy ideas, but it's not something we want. That's for sure. I know. I can just tell. I can tell in your text that you're annoyed, Steve.
Yes, it's it was brought to my attention. Oh. I don't know, 9:10, 9:15, somewhere right in there. Very disappointing, unexpected. But as you said, sometimes life gets in the way.
Yeah, we'll figure it out one way or another. We'll be here for the big show. We'll be back on if we're not here in some form tomorrow. We will be here for draft day Thursday. The big show Friday is from noon to 3, where we're going to go over day one of the draft. The winners, the losers, the surprises, et cetera. Countdown to it every day. We're trying to get some draft time in. You can email us, RAD at radradio.com, and be part of the Mixed Picks Sports Show. You can call at 888-989-9811. And we're going to start today by checking what I call the Steve Mickelson confidence meter, because Steve was, you were still pulling an Eeyore yesterday. It was a double Eeyore. On both the Sixers, but to a greater degree, the Vegas Golden Knights. And so Alec wrote in with an email that said, Knights win game one. Stars had double the shots that the Knights had, 15-30. In 60 minutes of play, Vegas managed 15 shots on goal. Mark Stone, his first game in 3 months, in less than 90 seconds, scores. There's a whole bunch that led up to that. And kind of, I mean, what was it? He had a lacerated spleen or something like that that kept him out. But the Vegas Golden Knights, they win. They win. So in the NBA and the NHL, the first 8 games in each league, all home teams won. Vegas wins on the road. Do you feel better, Steve? Where's your confidence meter now about the Knights?
That was much more of the Knights I was expecting going into the playoffs. And also, you know, again, just shows my disappointment in that loss to end the season. Mark Stone scoring in less than a minute 30 into the game. That was it. It was like, all right, this is what I've been expecting. Now, I had the game on, but I didn't have it on volume because I was listening to the basketball game and watching the other basketball game at the time as well. The Stars scored a goal to tie it at 1-1. The Knights challenged it. It was removed, and it went back to 1-0, at which point then the Knights scored again to go up 2-0. At that point, I was feeling really confident about the game and going, okay, this is the Vegas Golden Knights I've been expecting to see. Hopefully they can keep it going. Disappointed at only 15 shots on goal, but their power play, 2 goals on power plays. The Stars are normally really good at penalty kills in that, but you have to in the playoffs. You have to convert on your power plays and stop your opponents. That's a big part of what playoff hockey is about.
And ultimately, the Knights still won on the road in Dallas, 4-3. I mean, I can hear it in your voice. I mean, it's like night and day. I think it's turned around, right? The confidence meter check-in. You see a path for Vegas now past the Stars and maybe all the way back to the finals.
I see a pretty good path. I'm still not convinced they're going to beat the Stars. I mean, there's a reason the Stars were the number one seed. But where yesterday I'd have told you this was probably going 5, I'm into that 6-7 game series now.
Okay.
Because I watching the game, I feel the Knights are a lot healthier than they've been. And this is where the complaint is Mark Stone with his lacerated spleen, but he's able to go and play minutes yesterday, but yet he couldn't go a couple of days ago. Well, he couldn't go a couple of days ago because then they'd have to put him on the roster and his hit against the salary cap would take effect. And then they'd have to release somebody off of this roster. So this is where there were complaints from other teams about that roster manipulation with the salary cap. And if I was the other teams, I'd be complaining as well. But you know what? It's legal in the NHL, just like the Dodgers with deferring all of Ohtani's money, you know, for 10 years down the road. If it's legal, you cannot complain about it.
We're going to stay with hockey before we go back to Steve's confidence meter. We did talk yesterday about the Carolina Hurricanes. They're technically the favorite, but anybody can win this year and any year you were talking about with the Stanley Cup playoffs, Steve. But they did a number on the Islanders last night. They scored the game-tying and the game-winning goals 9 seconds apart in the third period. They ultimately won 5-3. Islanders captain Anders Lee said after the game that this was a kick in the gut. The Hurricanes are up 2-0. Are they headed past New York?
Yes, they were headed past New York to start with. But the Islanders, you know, they up 3-0 in that game. Watching it when the Hurricanes scored, I'm like, okay, we're going to go to overtime. Let's see how it goes. Hopefully, you know, I like overtimes that drag on for a bit. But then I looked up again and boom, they scored again. And it was like, what the heck? That's got to be so deflating for the Islanders. They came out on the road. This is a game because no series in the hockey playoffs or basketball playoffs, to me, ever really start until a road team wins the game. Once a road team gets a win, okay, now we're on. And they were up 3-0. They had to believe they were going to win that. And to go and lose in the fashion that they did. And this is all in like the last 2:20 of the game. So it wasn't like early third period. It was late in the game to give up 3 goals. Just devastating for the Islanders.
So there's 4 playoff games tonight in the NHL. They're all at 1-0 game 2. You know, it's early in this whole process. The Rangers are hosting Washington. You got the Florida on Florida crime with Tampa Bay and the Panthers. Winnipeg's hosting Colorado. Vancouver's hosting Nashville. What, any of those jump out at you, Steve? Like, yeah, this is the game. This is the series I got my eye on.
The two series I'm looking at, Avalanche Jets. This is going to be a high scoring. We saw it in game 1. The Jets can score. The Avalanche defense isn't the best, and they can score as well. I don't think it'll be as high scoring as the first game, but there's going to be a lot of goals in this series. And the Predators Canucks, this is the opposite. This is two teams that want to play physical, slow the puck down, intimidate their opponents, play more old school hockey with beating them up with big hits, etc. And we saw it in game 1. Canucks came up with 3 goals in the third period to win game 1. But these two series are the opposite ends here. The Canucks Predators is much more like that rock fight of just slow hockey and wear your opponent down.
One more hockey note. We talked a few weeks ago. It all became official like overnight. There was this plan in place of how the Phoenix Coyotes could stay in Arizona. But it depended on this land auction at the end of June. And if that didn't go through, then all of a sudden, boom, we're going to Utah. Salt Lake City, next year, they're going to play where the Jazz play in the same arena. They got to make some alterations, et cetera. And we talked about the fact that they are not taking the Coyote name with them. There's a plan in place to where, I forget, Steve, you're much more in depth on this, but there's a plan in place to where the Phoenix could get a hockey team. Like, is it when the NHL expands next? That's part of this whole deal?
The owner has 5 years to build a NHL-ready stadium. And if he does it, then they will be granted an expansion team. If he does not, then his stake in the NHL goes away.
So the new owner, which was – this was all, as we talked about, basically orchestrated by the actual league, the NHL, was a guy named Ryan Smith. And the question was, well, if they're not going to be the Coyotes, what are they going to be called? Ultimately, you said, Steve, I don't care, just so their uniforms look good. But he did say yesterday that he's going to legitimately let fans vote on it. Now, he went on this rant on this podcast he was on. They've got technology. I never believe this stuff. I always believe that there's – it's like, look, if you're at all within the industry, you know that American Idol is not based on fan voting. They ultimately – the producers control all of this stuff, and they take things into account. And all these shows – anybody that claims fan voting is I almost never believe. That's like a zoo, right? Like, you know how zoos every now and then say, go ahead and name our baby giraffe? I don't know why they're rigging the system. But allegedly, Mr. Smith claims that fans are going to be able to vote, and it's going to be based on a bracket. He would not officially say what the names to start the bracket will be. But that doesn't stop the media, who dug into the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office and found out that last week a company filed applications with the office for trademarks on different hockey team names. The company is based out of Utah and is directly connected with Smith Entertainment Group, as in Ryan Smith, the owner of the new Utah hockey team. So it, unless it's a misdirect, it seems like the choices are, and they all went with Utah in terms of guessing, rather than Salt Lake City, they're going to name it Utah. Would it be, and some of these we've heard, the Blizzard, the Venom, the Fury, the Yetis, that's terrible, the Black Diamonds, the Shredders, right, because that's all they do in Utah is ski, that's stupid, the Stingers, the Golden Eagles, and the worst one of all, the Utah Hockey Club, were all patented. I don't have a horse in this race. I don't really care, other than a few of them. I go, that's just stupid.
Wow. I agree with you, and I don't believe, if I owned a team, I'd never let the public pick it. The idea I would believe behind that is, let's let the public throw a bunch of names out. Maybe something comes out of it that we hadn't thought of that sticks and says, wow, hey, you know what? Maybe we need to consider that. That to me is the only reason you would open it up to the public. The last one you said, the Utah Hockey Club, and I might get in a little trouble here, but this isn't soccer.
Right.
You know, I get the FCs, I get the Uniteds, I get that in soccer. I'm really not looking to make a soccer team name into the NHL. No. So that one goes away. The Shredders, the some other ones I'm not a big fan of in any way. No. I'm glad to hear they're going with Utah and not Salt Lake City, because I think they need to appeal to a much larger group. So I am glad to see that. But again, for me, names and team colors are very important.
They are. Oh, I mean, look, I mean, the internet, if you pay attention, you're a sports fan at all, you don't even have to really pay that much attention. It's all people are, you know, Denver Broncos fans are up in arms over their uniforms. You and I went over the Lions uniforms when they came out, and about half a dozen teams got new uniforms. The look, the jersey, the colors, obviously the name matters, you know, just the hockey team. I still like Utah Blizzard, but there's that question over the Avalanche and whether or not there's some competing issues over natural disasters in Utah. I don't know what it is. I don't really care. I don't really care in the end.
Yes, you know, the Black Diamonds, I was not a fan of it. And sorry, I'm going to take this slightly different because I didn't send you this text.
Yes.
I don't know if it's me in the pictures I'm seeing, but it looks like they're putting things in the numbers. Like when I looked at the Lions numbers, the white numbers, it looked like it had a whole bunch of black dots. So it looked like the pegboard in my garage that hung the tools. And then I read yesterday that the Denver Broncos are putting triangles in their numbers all over their numbers. Please tell me I'm seeing this wrong and this isn't going to become a trend, because the couple of pictures I saw, I thought they looked awful. And to start putting little dots or triangles or stuff in the numbers, to me, is a horrible trend. There's a reason we don't have that. And hopefully if it is something that's coming out now, it will go away quickly.
By the way, we got an email while you were talking about the Vegas Golden Knights from Kelly, RAD@radradio.com, says, OMG, I've never heard Steve cuss before. I'm listening and I'm watching Rad TV, and I thought I heard Steve say, slow the F down. But then I realized, no, he said, slow the puck down, as he was talking about hockey. Yes, that would have been a very noticeable moment, Kelly, for sure. All right, back to the Steve Mickelson confidence meter. As we went into the NBA playoffs, you were high on the Philadelphia 76ers, and yet they let a road playoff victory slip through their fingers. Last night, the Sixers were up in the first quarter 25-18. They were up at the half 53-49. The Knicks came storming back in the third quarter 79-74. And then the Sixers took the lead. They had a 5-point lead with 47 and a half seconds to go. Kyle Lowry split a pair of free throws, 14 and a half seconds left. Jalen Brunson had a three-pointer, bounce in. Maxey turns the ball over, three-pointer, winds up becoming the game-winning shot. Philadelphia had a ton of complaints after the game was over. They said that Philadelphia had been calling timeouts, that it wasn't granted. They were frustrated a foul wasn't called on Brunson for grabbing a handful of Maxey's jersey. But in the end, the reason we go to you and your confidence meter is you weren't feeling really good after game one. But 76ers superstar center Joel Embiid, after the game, declared that Philadelphia will go on to win the series. Now, a lot of people hear that and say, well, what else is he going to say? Well, he didn't have to say anything. But instead, he decided to, you know, puff up his chest and say, don't worry, we got this. We're going to win. Are you with Embiid?
Not entirely. Yesterday's game, especially the ending, was frustrating. And number one, I want to point out, never leave it to the refs to determine the outcome of the game. You need to take care of business yourself. I understand the Sixers' frustration, because if you watch this, Brunson hit a three. He got a big bounce off the rim. It went in. The Sixers, you could see, we're going to struggle to get the ball in. You see Nurse on the sideline signaling for timeout. And as a referee, you have to be aware of this. You have to be taking notice of this. We see it in the NFL. We see it in the NBA. The referees also have to be aware of the situation in order to be looking for that timeout to grant it. They did not grant the timeout. They had to force an inbounds pass to Maxey, which he didn't catch clean, and then it turned into a rugby style. It just became a free fall on the court. Next thing you know, the ball kicked out. They kicked it out to DiVincenzo, who hit another three. Boom, 6 points just like that. And I get Nurse's frustration. You're up by five. And even the announcers were saying, you got to take time out here. You know, you get to advance the ball to half court, and you can at least control it. The refs never granted it. I've seen replay clips of it. He is showing T on the sideline. They didn't go. But again, you can't leave this in the ref's hands. The last part I want to make, though, if you watch the game, and B was struggling late in that game. He was out of breath. He wasn't in game shape. It's one of the things I worried about through this. He started off, he was still able to score, but he did nothing on defense. He didn't do anything for rebounds. He didn't do anything for assists. And those are the things you need from Embiid. And he's not in game shape yet.
Phillies go back home Thursday night. They host New York, but are you done with being on the Sixers bandwagon?
Yes and no. I still think that overall a better team. It's just Embiid isn't in the playing shape I was hoping that he would be in. And watching the game, I mean, Bogdanovich hit two key threes late in that game to go from 1-7 for the Knicks. He was a pickup that they had. And if you remember, I liked the pickups that the Knicks had at the break. So if the Sixers are going to lose to the Knicks, won't disappoint me.
Same story, different day for the Lakers-Nuggets series. I struggled as mightily as I could to stay up to watch this mess. Jamal Murray went 9 of 24 from the field in game one, which the Nuggets won. He struggled early last night. The Nuggets trailed by 20 in the second half. Remember, the Lakers blew a big lead in game one. And then, again, last night, the Lakers, they could just not stop Murray and Jokic. They roasted the Lakers. They got to 99 each. And then Murray got a buzzer beater to win 101-99. Speaking of leaving it in the ref's hands, LeBron James was one of several Lakers players to criticize the officiating during his post-game comments, saying, quote, "I don't understand what's going on in the replay center." He specifically took issue with a shooting foul called against Michael Porter Jr. on D'Angelo Russell late in the third quarter that was overturned after the Nuggets challenged the call. Okay, that's late in the third quarter. You got a whole quarter to overcome that kind of thing. This is what? This is 10 games in a row, by the way, that the Nuggets have won against the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers, I think, have kind of shown us, Steve, they're not going to win this series.
I don't think they are. They've blown two huge leads. You just can't do that. It's on the road. You got to steal a game. I know that they're going home, but when you have 20-point leads on the road and you can't hold on, Jamal Murray's shot to win the game. Unbelievable shot. He's doing a step back over a 7-footer, nothing but net as the clock expires. I'm not a big Lakers fan. I was ecstatic. That was a highlight of the night. It made up for the Sixers losing. An unbelievable shot by Murray in a clutch situation. the Lakers just, again, you just look at them and it's AD, it's LeBron. You know, you got Westbrook who's helping out, but they just don't have the bench strength. They don't have the depth of a, you know, Nuggets team, and that's why I don't believe they can win this series.
So similar question for tonight's NBA games. There's three of them. You had already, I think, kind of, I think you put the Phoenix Suns up as your most disappointing team of the season, or one of them, when we were talking about it, surprisingly. I mean, they made the playoffs. They're at Minnesota tonight. Indiana's at Milwaukee. Milwaukee, everybody had buried Milwaukee before game one. I mean, all the talking heads were like, oh, this is going to just show the whole Doc Rivers thing was, well, Milwaukee won. They're up one game to none. And the Mavs and Clippers, which is the one that intrigues me the most because I think it's they're the most evenly matched. But I, which one of those would grab you, or any of them?
Well, the Mavs-Clippers is, to me, one of the best series out there. Mavs last game, they shot terrible the first half. I have to believe they're going to shoot better than that. The Clippers, there has been a late move. We're seeing the Clippers going up to a 1.5, 2-point favorite. Where the Mavs were favored, I think, when we started the show. That's telling me that Kawhi might have a chance to play tonight and be in the lineup for the Clippers, which would be big for him because he's been out, I think, 9 straight games, something like that. But I still lean on the Mavs. I think Irvin, Luka can get it done here. I know it's on the road, but I just, if Kawhi's not playing, And the Clippers ran the offense through Zubac, which was a great change of pace. They really put the Mavs on their heels. But I like the Mavs here. I think they're a deeper team. And Kawhi, though, is a big key.
Well, and as of last night, they were saying questionable for game two. And this kind of goes to something you were talking about, I think, yesterday, where it might have already leaked out that he is going to play. Because I've checked every kind of breaking source that we have. Like, it hasn't hit us yet, but I wonder if it has hit somewhere else that, oh, yeah, Kawhi's going to play, and that's why you saw that move.
And that usually comes out because they have a morning shoot around and get an idea of where they feel. And, you know, those things happen at that 10 in the morning type of thing. And usually reporters or someone's in there somewhere.
Yep.
That, oh, hey, he's looking good. He's running with the first team. And those things tend to come out following that morning shootout.
Yeah, we'll probably get official word before the end of today's show, which is only 32 minutes away. More after this.
Knicks Picks, the Knicks Picks Sports Show.
Let's go!
We got this one from Sean. We're going to jump over to baseball now. We talked yesterday about this narrative that's been created over pitcher injuries and the Major League Baseball Players Association blaming it on the pitch clock. Which seems asinine. Justin Verlander himself said, look, it's more about how slick the baseballs are and the fact that we're teaching guys. It's all about velocity and spin. And Steve and I got into about how young we're teaching guys, kids, literal kids, 9 years old, to throw it as hard as you can and spin the ball as hard as you can. And we kept using Greg Maddux as one example. And Sean wrote in, RED@radradio.com, and said Tom Glavine was another guy that came up as a flamethrower. And then he learned location and change of speed, and he went on to win 300-plus games. Throwing gas just isn't sustainable unless your name is Nolan Ryan, right? That's why Nolan Ryan and guys like that stand out, because just as hard and as spinny as you can is not going to last forever, and especially if we're starting them at 9. I don't want to redo yesterday, but God, Steve.
I just don't understand it. You look back in the history of baseball and you saw the pitchers, they threw complete games, they threw innings, and now suddenly they're no longer able to get out of the fifth inning. And most every starter now in the fifth inning's thrown 85, 90 pitches. You got to get back to the art of pitching. That's the bottom line. Figure out the art of pitching again. And that's where baseball needs to take it.
So you were talking about during the NBA playoffs recap, you were talking about, you know, the Sixers were trying to call timeouts and you could see it. It was captured. The weirdest thing that happened yesterday was actually in baseball. And then the aftermath of it, the Yankees and the A's opened their 4-game series. It was a day game at Yankee Stadium. Manager Aaron Boone was in the dugout for one batter. 5 pitches total before he was ejected. Now, if you're watching this on Rad TV at members.radradio.com, you can always go back and watch this as well if you haven't seen the video. But we'll run it, and in real time, this is what happened. Estiera Ruiz is the leadoff hitter for the A's, and he's hit by a pitch on an 0-2 count. And the pitch clearly plunked him on the foot, but the Yankees dugout thought Ruiz swung at it. And part of the confusion is that the home plate umpire did point down to the first base umpire, who indicated, no, he didn't swing. And the Yankees were saying, wait a minute, he did. And so Aaron Boone says, wait a minute, to umpire Hunter Wendelstead. I think the son of, was it Harry or Harvey Wendelstead? I forget. Wendelstead's a longstanding name in MLB. And you can hear all this happening on TV. Wendelstead yells back at Boone and says, I did what I was supposed to do. I checked. I'm looking at him. He got hit by the pitch. If you say anything else, he says to Boone, you're going to get ejected. And he yells at Boone, if you're watching right now. And they keep the camera on Boone live during the broadcast. And you can see Aaron Boone is sitting there seething in the dugout, but his mouth doesn't move. And then all of a sudden, Wendelstead says, you're out of here. Boone comes running out. Other players in the Yankees dugout, immediately they all start pointing to the stands, the fans behind the Yankees dugout, saying, no, it was a fan that yelled at you. And Boone's ejected. Wendelstead shouting, you're gone. Wendelstead gave Boone the hook after hearing an objection from Boone's direction. When Boone says to Wendelstead, this is during the game, that a fan behind the dugout, not him or another Yankee, said it, Wendelstead says, you can hear on the broadcast, quote, I don't care who said it. You're gone. To which Boone says, what do you mean you don't care? I didn't say a word. It was above our dugout. Now, when I was, because I flipped over and caught this almost immediately right after it started to go viral. And I thought, okay, this is one of those deals where Hunter Wendelstead, after the game, he's going to somehow calm down or acknowledge heat of the moment or knee-jerk reaction or find a middle ground. No, not even close. I mean, he tripled down he did not apologize. Instead, when asked about the whole thing after the game, not only did he provide his point of view, but he showed no remorse for what a lot of us were thinking. Wait a minute. Boone's mouth never moved. He said, this is what Wendelstead said, quote, Boone said there was a fan right above the dugout. This isn't my first ejection. In the entirety of my career, I have never ejected a player or a manager for something a fan has said. I understand that's his story. That's what Aaron is portraying, end quote, meaning he's calling Aaron Boone a liar. He goes on to say, quote, Aaron Boone is the manager of the Yankees and is responsible for everything that happens in that dugout. I heard something come from the far end of the dugout. He's the manager, so he's the one that had to go. Now, Boone is kind of indicating he wants to take this up the ladder to MLB, which is pretty protective of the umpires. I'm sure everybody that has a camera is trying to get, do we have a wide shot of the entire Yankees dugout to see did anybody's lips move? But right now, this does seem like Wendelstead's on the wrong side of this.
Yeah, I don't know. First of all, you look at Aaron Boone's history. He's been thrown out of a lot of games. He's one of the managers that does get kicked out of games. And you and I have played baseball, and even though the manager, he is ultimately responsible for it, I'm not 100% convinced it came from a fan.
Okay.
There's a lot of times the players or another coach, hey, look, he's been warned. Well, I'm going to say what he would have said. And it is possible, I believe, that someone in that dugout did say that. We know it wasn't Boone. We can see it wasn't Aaron Boone, but it's possible somebody else said. Now, let's go with the way it's appearing. To me, this sets an ugly precedent because now you're a road team. Your road manager starts getting in trouble. I, as a fan sitting close to that dugout, you got to believe people are going to start yelling because I can get that manager kicked out and he doesn't have to do anything. And that's the part that worries me a little bit here is you're enticing fans to get more vocal in an effort to get a manager or a player kicked out because now the precedence has been set where prior to this, I would have said, nah, it's not going to be possible. The umpires know who's really saying something.
Well, and that's Wendelstead's story. He's sticking to it. He's like, I know. He has these magical umpire ears. He knows it came from the Yankee dugout. So let me ask you about, and you say it's possible, and you're right, Aaron Boone, he sets the tone for that dugout. Maybe a player just knew. Okay, I know he really wants to say something. Do you agree with Wendelstead that if a player down the line in the dugout said something that wasn't a fan, Do you believe that it's fair that the manager takes the hit for that?
Well, this is where I go with this. I've always complained that the umpires in everything, and even us as a society, we have rabbit ears. At the end of the day, it's just words. I mean, it doesn't hurt you. They're just words. He should not be that ready to go. Oh, no, somebody said something else. You're immediately fired. Look, take a little bit of it. It's okay. You know Boone's not saying it, but it was somebody else in the dugout. Just take it. Let it ease down. Let the game keep playing. Because at the end of the day, no one goes to a game to watch a referee and umpire at all. We are there. The best ref games are the games we don't notice them. And over the last several years, umpires, referees have become such a major part of the game. And that's a part that I don't like, that trend. They need to be invisible, and he was not.
Let's stay with the Yankees real quick. Look, the Yankees, it's early. God, it's so early in Major League Baseball. So we kind of sometimes we have overreactions and things like that. Yankees are fine. They're essentially tied with the Orioles for first place in the American League East, which is what we expect it to be for most of the season. But a big deal being made out of their superstar, Aaron Judge, and since we're putting Blake Snell under the microscope for whether or not the Giants blew it with that signing after three starts, Judge struck out on Saturday four times in four at-bats against the Rays. Went viral, the booing. As of Saturday, he was batting 179. He's down to 174. Judge himself says, I'd probably do the same thing if I was a fan. I'd be booing me too. He says this isn't about his toe injury from last year. He says he's being too aggressive on balls that are out of the strike zone, missing pitches over the plate. And he goes on to say it's still early. It's a long season. Is this the Aaron Judge, Aaron Rodgers moment of relax? I'm Aaron Judge.
Yes, entirely. No. Look, no Yankee fan would say, oh, we got to trade Aaron Judge. He's done. His career's over. Get him out of here. We don't want him as a Yankee. He's still one of the best players in all of baseball. Every player goes through a slump. He's going through his right now. It's not that big of a deal. They're a half a game out of first place. Yes, they're not playing that great. They're 5-5, but they're still, you know, 15-8. They're playing 650 baseball. That will get you in the playoffs and be one of the best teams at the end of the season if they have a 650 winning percentage at the end of the year.
By the way, the Dodger fans are freaking out too after they had a 10-4 start to the season with what a lot of people would describe as a everywhere from a banged up to an undermanned pitching staff. They had a nightmarish homestand. They did pull out the last game of their homestand against the Mets, but on Saturday they had lost 5 out of their last 6, 7 out of their last 9. Again, early in the season, they're essentially tied for first place with the Padres. They're on the road. They start the road trip tonight. They're at Washington. That'll probably get them better right away. Again, early overreaction. I mean, they're fine. Isn't it the same thing you just ended with about the Yankees, about the Dodgers?
Not exactly, because I think the expectations on the Dodgers were too high to start with. Before the season started, we talked about the injuries to their pitching staff. Would their pitching hold up? The questions on defense, if Mookie Betts is going to be playing short and Muncy's playing third, and you got Gavin Lux at second base, you know, who has having a hard time throwing the ball to first. So there's questions. Pitching and defense has always won championships, and those were the two big questions for the Dodgers. So for me, yes, the Dodgers are going to be there. They're still one of the best teams in baseball. Do I think the Dodger fans were unrealistic thinking this team? And if you listen to them, they'd win 120 games this year, and they'd go virtually undefeated. Those expectations were way too high. They're not even the best team in baseball. So, yes, you just need to relax. You'll still be there at the end of the season. But I like it because it's a wake-up call to bring them down to reality that your expectations were unrealistic. You got to be real with what your team really is.
Let's look at the other side of it really quickly with the Chicago White Sox, who are looking to make their own place in history. They have 3 wins in their first 22 games. They're 3-19. Making them primed to make a run at the 1962 New York Mets, who finished with 40 wins and 120 losses. That is still the modern record for the most losses in a season. The 2003 Detroit Tigers came the closest. They got 119 losses, but no one's gotten to that magic number of 120 or 121. And even if you look at the Reds, 2 years ago, they started 3-22. They finished with 100 losses. The A's last year started 5-23. God, finished at 50-112. Could Chicago make a run at 121?
Yes. It is amazing how bad this team is. And we look at the record at 3-19. But to really put it in perspective, they've played 22 games. They've scored 45 runs total. So they're averaging 2 runs a game. The next lowest team in all of baseball in runs scored is the Twins at 74 runs.
Wow.
So they are 29 runs behind the second worst scoring team in baseball. And then you add into it, they're giving up 123 runs in those 22 games. So they're giving up, you know, 6 runs a game. That's not even close. Normally, look, bad teams give up 6 runs a game, but they score 4 runs a game, 4.5. They're giving up 6 and scoring 2. There's not a whole lot of room there.
Wow. All right, we gotta do our NFL draft segment. It's draft week. Remember, on Friday, we're doing an expanded mixed pick show from noon to 3. Thursday draft day will be live like usual from 10 to 11 as we look forward to day 1. Day 2, Friday, is all about analyzing the surprises, the hits, the misses, and what teams did and what they need to do for the remainder of the weekend. We'll do that after this.
Mix Picks, the Mix Pick Sports Show.
We did get a few people writing in about the Aaron Boone ejection and Hunter Wendelstead, the umpire. Some people pointing out he doesn't have the best percentage of accuracy calling balls and strikes in the game. I don't know what the point of that is, because Major League Baseball doesn't seem to do anything about it. There are rumors, or rumblings rather, that a couple websites have done exactly what I've said. They've gone through the tape and they've been able to show that a fan in the front row above the dugout, the story I'm getting emailed in, is that you can clearly see he yelled something, changed his shirt afterwards. Nothing ever happened to the fan. I can't confirm that, but I've seen different emails from different people come in. We'll see if that turns into any type of a story, and I don't know how it would or would change anything on either side. But we also got this email during the break from Evan, RED@radradio.com. It's like, dude, I'm getting to it. He says, I want to hear Steve's opinion on Wilson to the Broncos. That's exactly my first thing. I got it, Evan. Just give me a break. New York Jets drafted Zach Wilson with the number 2 pick in 2021, and they traded him to the Denver Broncos yesterday for a bag of hay. The Jets got a 6th round selection in this week's NFL draft from the Broncos. The Broncos not only got Wilson, they got a 7th round pick as well. So we'll start on the Jets side. Aaron Rodgers now has newly signed backup Tyrod Taylor. Those are the only 2 quarterbacks on the roster, and there is talk about the Jets drafting a quarterback in the 1st round. Now, they have the number 10 pick. Steve, the idea being draft a quarterback and pull the old Jordan Love thing here. Draft a young quarterback who will sit behind Rodgers for a year or two with the number 10 pick. I don't know if that's the best use of the Jets' first-round draft pick, but do you see that as their play?
Not necessarily. I see it their play if the quarterback they really want in the draft falls to them. But then I'd have to ask, what's Aaron Rodgers' reaction going to be? We know how much he hated it when the Packers used a first-round pick for Jordan Love. Now he goes to the Jets. His goal is to win right now, which means get somebody ready to play immediately that can help us win a Super Bowl. Yeah. And to go to a backup quarterback, to me, I just don't think it'd sit well with Aaron Rodgers. And we all know the rumors that Rodgers pretty much controls this roster from everything we're hearing. And that's been, you know, another problem within this organization from others.
Yeah, and that's why I don't buy that story for a minute, for exactly that reason. There have been so many stories from so many sources, none of them really credibly debunked, that Aaron Rodgers is the driving force behind this. I bet Aaron Rodgers signed off on just trading Wilson. And who knows? But I don't buy that they're going to draft a quarterback. What about from the other side, which to me is more juicy? What are the Broncos doing? They've got the number 12 pick. They've got Jared Stidham as their quarterback. Is that how you pronounce his last name? He started the last 2 games.
Yes.
What are they going to do with Zach Wilson? Can they wait to 12 for somebody to fall, or are they in the Vikings position we were talking about yesterday where the Broncos are going to try to trade up?
I don't think they have enough draft capital to move up into this draft to get one of the top quarterbacks. They have to be hoping that a Michael Penix will fall to them, or maybe a J.J. McCarthy. I like the trade from the Broncos side. Zach Wilson's more athletic than Stidham. The backup, DiNucci. Neither one of these guys are going to play. So really you're looking at it going, if we're able to get our quarterback, we got Zach Wilson and whoever we end up drafting as the quarterbacks. Zach has talent. It didn't work out in New York. It doesn't mean it's going to work out in Denver. But if anyone can turn him around, I have to believe Sean Payton had to have seen something in him that said, you know what? We can make him a decent quarterback. And worst case scenario, he becomes our backup here in Denver and can do a pretty good job there. So they didn't give up anything. I mean, they traded a sixth, got back a seventh in addition to getting him. So it was, he was a free flyer, not as expensive as the Cowboys, you know, did with Trey Lance.
Right. So since it's draft week, we're trying to spend a segment every day, and Steve's not going to be able to join us tomorrow. We're not sure if we're going to be able to do a show tomorrow because of this last-minute technical issue. So I'm going to flip around the order a little bit, Steve, as we do talk about the draft. We wanted to focus on what a few teams should do, may do, because it ties into what we were just talking about in yesterday's conversation. I am finding the Chargers with the fifth pick to be more and more intriguing as we start to talk about the Cardinals have the fourth pick. And we were talking yesterday, no pun intended, that they may be the team in the catbird seat. They're so invested in Kyler Murray. There's so many teams that want to move up, get a quarterback that may trade to move into that number four position, meaning the first four picks could likely be quarterbacks. And then come the Chargers, who don't need a quarterback. The idea of Marvin Harrison Jr. being paired with that Chargers offense, with Jim Harbaugh, with one of your favorite quarterbacks in the league, that could really be an interesting story if that's how that played out.
I think the Chargers have to love exactly where they're sitting. Their needs, offensive line, alt. They would get the best offensive tackle lineman in the draft at that five slot. They also need wide receiver. Well, okay, if the Cardinals trade out, now we get our pick of the three wide receivers who we think is the best. So we're going to get arguably the best wide receiver in the draft. Because they have Justin Herbert, they don't need a quarterback. They could trade out of that spot, but I don't think they're going to want to trade too far because then they lose the top lineman or the top wide receiver. And right now they're going to get one or the other with that pick.
Yeah, and the Chargers are, look, Jim Harbaugh, he's like, we're going to win the Super Bowl this year, next year. I mean, he didn't quite pull a LeBron, you know, with the Heat and all that. But the Chargers are a team that, look, they got a lot of problems they're still working on. We went through it earlier in the season, salary cap, their defense and all that. I don't know if we – do we say that they're built to win or – I mean, you add either one of what you're talking about, somebody who can truly protect Herbert and or another weapon for him to throw to. They are a playoff team, aren't they, at least?
They are, in my opinion, a border playoff team. And the reason I don't put them as high is you're still fighting with the Chiefs, and this is a tough division. I mean, it really is. And that's where I still have a little bit of problem with them saying they are absolutely a playoff team. I think they're a very good team. I would be shocked if they didn't make the playoffs next year, but I can see them making the playoffs this year.
So let's stay in that hardest division. The Raiders are in that division as well. There's a lot of chatter. They've got the 13th pick right now. The Raiders have some very specific needs, and everybody's still kind of wondering what exactly are they going to do quarterback-wise in the long run. What do you see or think or feel the Raiders are looking at?
Yeah, for me, the problem with the Raiders is they have too many positions of need. They need a quarterback. We all know that. We're not going in with Aiden O'Connell at quarterback. But to get one of the top quarterbacks, you're going to have to give up a lot of draft capital, which isn't going to allow you to restock your depth at these other positions. To me, I think they need another wide receiver still. They need help on defense at that linebacker and secondary. And I'm still not sold on their running back situation. You know, I know they let Jacobs go. Zamir White is their main back. They got Madison as the backup. I still think they need a little help at running back. So for me, the Raiders need too much help to go all in on a quarterback. And if it does, then all these other weaknesses, you know, come up closer to the surface and don't give them that chance for success.
I mean, a terrible position really for a guy right out of college, especially if they were just going to throw him in and let him start. But what are the Raiders going to do about – they're kind of like the Broncos right now. I'm sitting here going, what are the Raiders going to do about quarterback?
Yes, I'm not – you know, Aiden O'Connell, they signed Gardner Minshew. Maybe they believe that Gardner Minshew can win this year, you know, maybe next year and pull a Baker Mayfield like he did down in Tampa until they're able to replenish the stock at the other positions and then go out and get a quarterback. I just don't see how they can even be a playoff contender with the two current quarterbacks they have on this roster.
We'll stay with semi-regional interest for most of our listening audience and go to the Niners. I mean, the Niners, they've been built to win for 4 or 5 years now. They've gone to the Super Bowl twice. They've lost to the Chiefs both times. I mean, is there a need for the Niners that you see in the draft? It's like a glaring thing. They're way down at, what, the 31st pick. Is there something where you're like, this is what they have to do, or is it more about you got to stay healthy, get your crap together, and teach Shanahan how to close a game out?
Yeah, and it's building depth, replacing. They lost some key players with that. I don't think they have anyone that they're expecting to come in and immediately contribute. If it happens to happen, great. But for me, if I'm the 49ers, I'm going by the best talent available, not position specific. I do think the Niners could use a little help at offensive line. You know, we've talked about Aiyuk, and if he does sign with them or if they use a draft spot for him, you know, if Aiyuk signs, Deebo Samuel's going to be going. I know you have Jennings sitting there, but you want to go get another wide receiver, and maybe in a year or two he can help contribute. So I'd be looking at that. And I still think they need some help at defensive line as much as – and they value defensive line. We know when players have gone away, they need to bring some more depth into that rotation because so much of this 49ers defense relies on the pass rush. And we saw it the second half of the season and into the Super Bowl. They just didn't have the pass rush that we've come to expect.
Usually at this point, I say, I'll see you in 23 hours, Steve. We know that's not true due to technical issues and other things going on your end. We may or may not have a Mixed Pick Sports Show tomorrow. We'll announce it as soon as we get something together. But Steve and I will definitely be here draft day, and we'll go through what we're expecting at that point after all the chatter on day one. And remember, special edition on Friday from noon to 3, where we go over what happens on day one of the draft and what the teams need to do, who screwed up, who got it right as they head into the weekend. We will stay on top of the NBA and NHL playoffs as well. So quick math, is it 46 hours from now? Whatever. I'll see you Thursday morning, Steve.
Thank you.
Mix.